Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
Today, we are talking the moral poverty of prosperity preaching.
Woo, child.
This is a topic that we hadn't touched on the show. It's been about 2 years.
Okay.
We haven't touched prosperity gospel at all. Kind of because it's low-hanging fruit to me. Like, this is the one that I think that most people have some idea about.
Right.
But
yeah,
it won't go away.
No.
So we're going to talk about it today.
Today.
Okay.
All right.
Prosperity gospel.
It's trash. Like, no, go ahead.
There we go. Okay, don't cut them.
Okay.
So primarily started in the early 1900s.
Okay.
By a man named E.W. Kenyon. He started an institute called the Bethel Bible Institute. And he was heavily influenced by New Thought leaders at the time. And we'll do New Thought things later. But basically, what he adopted from New Thought was speaking the right words to create a new reality, and what you confess, you possess, and things like that. And so what ended up happening was people were attracted to this message, and then television became ubiquitous. So here's where that confluence of faith and technology merge, and usually where the church does not do a good job adapting. This teaching flourished because of technology.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in 1940, Oral Roberts began his ministry, and it was focused on healing and financial prosperity. So, and this is just a brief timeline, and we'll actually get into it. But then World War II is over. After that, you see this uptick in Pentecostal revivals. And so you see the tent revivals, the fire and brimstone, mm-hmm, preacher in the white mm-hmm. suit. You know, every night of the week, you're out doing this. And this was, there was an emphasis on these outward displays of spiritual gifts. This is speaking in tongues and healing,
mm-hmm,
and things like that. Then there was a big New Thought book that came out in 1952, Norman Vincent Peale's The Power of Positive Thinking, which really put that in the consciousness of Americans. Then we start with Oral Roberts, who was the first televangelist in the 1960s.
Okay.
It's a long time ago. They've been doing this for a long time. All right. Televangelism was awesome for people who could not get to church.
Yes.
So what we enjoy now is church online.
Bedside Baptist.
That is exactly what televangelism was for you know, people during the 60s.
Right.
It was, I couldn't go. I don't feel like going. Maybe I'm a little older or whatever. I don't
work, whatever.
Yeah, work. Mm-hmm. I'm tired. So let me just turn on television and do this. And so it was convenient.
Mm-hmm.
I love church online, so I'm not begrudging anybody for.
Right.
And the other thing was, there was not a lot of competition for theology during this time. Televangelists were all doing the same thing at this time.
Mm-hmm.
It was prosperity preaching. It was faith and health and wealth and things like that. So then you start to get this crop of televangelists. Kenneth Hagin starts the Word of Faith movement. Word of Faith is, you name it and claim it, that type of stuff. But Word of Faith came directly out of this prosperity preaching, which is an offshoot of borrowed components from some New Thought teachers.
Right.
Kenneth Hagin also used that technology to start to spread the message. So now they're starting to build these media companies now.
Right.
So you have, I remember growing up, Fred Price used to be on.
Yes.
It seemed like every time Fred Price had that 70s brown suit on, like it was one suit, color brown, every day.
Good suit.
Yeah, and he had this kind of funny high pitched voice, but he was always on the TV with his little 70s bush or whatever. And you know, you got your Kenneth Copeland's, which is your TBN. And
okay.
Kenneth and Gloria Copeland. You got, like we said, Fred Price, Benny Hinn.
Mm-hmm.
And so this became the crew. And for people who didn't go to church, these were their ministers.
Yes.
And then, so they would, in order to continue their ministries, they would solicit
donations. Yeah, tithes from these people.
Because, I mean, you're not giving it to a church. You might as well be giving
it
to them.
Give it to us.
And our teaching is saying, if you give it to us, you will be blessed.
Yeah.
Like Pastor Kearney Thomas and his prayer handkerchief, and you will be blessed if you. But God. So.
So this becomes the crew. But you got to understand that this crew beget Tammy Faye Baker and Jim Baker,
yes,
too.
Yes.
We didn't have, I didn't see them on the list. And I just want to throw some things to flesh out this timeline. So somebody's probably researched it, but I can see prosperity preaching taking traction after some of the major economic movements, mm-hmm, that follow that same timeline. So if you are telling me that I'll have health and wealth in the 40s and I'm an adult in the 40s, I remember the Great Depression. I remember the run up to the stock market crash of 29. So you have to understand that there was an environment that was ripe for these types of seeds to be planted, as far as people saying or believing that God not only wanted more for them, but wanted the best of whatever would be available on the market for them.
And we're going to get into that a little bit later in terms of discussing why,
mm-hmm,
why this connects with people,
exactly,
why this gospel resonates. So the old crew, the Benny Hens, which they have some hilarious like videos with Street Fighter videos with Street Fighter sounds and Ken and Ryu,
oh,
and Benny Hinn knocking people
with
out
with his jacket.
Yeah, but I mean, it became this comedy thing, and as you mentioned, Jimmy Tammy Faye Baker. Once the Baker Empire went down, they started to shift gears a little bit.
Yeah.
So it went away from the name and claim it theology and saying and things like that, and went more towards self help,
mm-hmm,
life affirming things.
Yeah.
All right. So now we're into present day prosperity, which we've had a little bit of a tone shift, and we got Joel Osteen, we got T.D. Jakes, Joyce Meyer, and Mr. Gulfstream himself, Creflo Dollar.
Ooh, child.
World Changes International Ministries. And each of them have their respective media empires. They have television appearances. They have books that they,
mm-hmm,
don't always write, but names go. Just like George Foreman puts his name on products, they've figured out that, you know, I don't have to write the book. I just have to put my name on the book and my picture.
Yeah.
And so,
or just do the foreword.
Yeah, just do the foreword. They have, mm-hmm, conferences. They have, you know, different speaking engagements. They still do kind of like revival things.
Mm-hmm.
And, like I said, media empires that we're dealing with now.
Yes.
Social media, all of that. All right. Also, that distribution has increased exponentially. So, mm-hmm, this gospel that started basically here in America is now globalized. And so you see places like a New Creation Church in Singapore, 30,000 members. You got a church in South Korea, Yodio Full Gospel, 800,000 members. This thing has moved. You got churches in Africa. You got churches in Brazil.
Yep.
You got churches everywhere, usually where there is economic trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And people want to
get out of that
situation.
Yep.
So why is it successful? As we said, people resonate. This message resonates with people.
Yes.
The new thought principles were a perfect fit for this gospel because the leanings towards Pentecostalism and this outward display of piety,
yep,
through spiritual giftings melded well with the outward adornments that come from financial wealth. Okay. So I can show you how good God is by how good my car looks.
I'm out here looking blessed.
Yeah. I can show you how my faith is working for me,
mm-hmm,
by this new house that I bought or this rental property that I just acquired,
and
things like that. So this is something it's attractive because it appeals to the natural inclination to be successful. Who doesn't want to be successful?
Mm-hmm.
This gospel is telling you that all you need to do to be successful is to have enough faith.
Hmm.
That seems really easy.
Right.
I believe in myself. I could be successful.
Right. And with understanding that, kind of by prioritizing faith over, let's say, skill or intellectual capacity, now you're saying that if people believe enough, they'll have it, which kind of turns on its head that it might be about hard work. It's more so about God's choosing of you to be the successful person, doing way more than what you have, you know, what you think you could do on your own power. And now God has expanded or enlarged your territory. And we see where these types of thoughts have led to It's not a direct correlation. Y'all know it's not me being a PhD, but I can see that kind of being thrown into some of the anti-intellectualism. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't need to make sense. Does it feel good? And definitely we understand that speaking about anything spiritual can get people whipped up in an emotional or even a mental state that says that this feels good, or I like how I feel when I'm thinking that I'm going to have more or be more or do more, doesn't always translate into, do I have the real skill set to carry those plans out?
Yeah, your faith levels the playing field mm-hmm. in this gospel, meaning it doesn't matter how skilled I am, how educated I am. I have as much faith as the next person,
right.
Which means I can be as or more successful. So that's really it's the gospel of the American dream. It's a capitalism gospel. You know, I can be what my Bible says I can be.
Yeah.
I can have what
I think we just need to acknowledge that capitalism is American imperialism. So even when we highlight where these churches have taken root all over the world, our imperialism is, let me get access to your markets. Mm-hmm. So it is not the proximity between our religious communities and our corporate communities have become so blended that it's not unheard of. If I'm going to build a multinational business, which is what these prosperity, some of these prosperity outfits have become, you know, you say a media empire, and I've got books, and those books get translated into all different languages, mm-hmm. and I've got telecasts, and at the same time they might be closed captioned in whatever the local languages are, and then I'm doing global tours and doing appearances. That is economic movements. That is not even, I am not convinced that the primary focus behind that is winning souls for Christ as much as it might be winning sales. So, and I'm just putting it out there.
I agree. I mean, it can't be.
No, it's not.
You got so many people depending on you.
It's not.
Depending on you got your family, your staff and all of that. That's a lot.
Yeah. And when you look at where some of these mega, you know, I hate throwing mega churches under the bus because I just, you know, they can do things because they have so many members. But when you really look at where like some of these places are located or where they were rooted, the communities around them are suffering. But mm-hmm. the churches stand out like crown jewels. Are we talking about personal examples?
Just
right
do
now?
It. Let's go.
I mean, so my favorite prosperity preacher who needs to sit down is on his way to Atlanta. And the truth of the matter is he loves to lay and claim Baltimore City, and Baltimore has been very good to him, but he has built his ministry on the back of poor black folk. Mm-hmm. And
who are we talking about?
Jamal.
Mr. Italian tie to the not look like a black power fist.
Oh, so many things. Boy, I tell you, I don't know where this growth comes from, but he tries it, okay? He tries it real strong, like every 2 to 4 years. And this is somebody who has pretty much, he has the finesse. He has a lot of finesse, and he engenders a lot of support from people who don't have a lot because they can relate to how he presents his hardships. You know, these are attacks. You know, somebody's trying to take me out. Nobody's trying to take you out. You're a womanizer, but it's fine. But it's okay. But I was going to this particular church for a short while.
His church that he just left.
Yeah, I was going to Empowerment, and it was convenient. I lived in West Baltimore, and I was seeking something, mm-hmm. but I'm an observer by nature, and I was just like, I can't, what is going on here?
Isn't there a lot of shine on these churches? I mean, it's alluring. You want to go there. You got a good music ministry. The people can sing.
They definitely have the components of the entertainment aspect. These are not... To me, my impression has not been, you know, these are places where we're going to get into the depth of teaching or into the depth of preaching. You know, I used to always say at any church, the 7 a.m. service is for the stone cold Christians. The 9:30 service is for those who are really striving. Mm-hmm. But the 11 and 12 o'clock, that's the fashion show that keeps the house open. It, no shade, because some of us are not getting up to go until, you know, 11 and 12 o'clock. But that was something that I witnessed there. And again, we talk about not only the service that people physically get up and go to, but how that service is broadcast nationally and internationally. I realized he wasn't broadcasting the 11 o'clock. He was broadcasting the 9:30, which was more tame, and I don't know. It just,
'cause you figure, especially if you're preaching the same message throughout multiple services, you get better as the morning progresses.
Exactly. So definitely by 11 and or by 11:30, I think it was good and warm. Mm-hmm. But I stopped going to that particular service because I didn't. I felt like it was entertainment, and let me tell you, it was more so because I was working at the time in the community, and to understand some of the things that were coming out of his mouth, versus not just him, but also just the ministerial staff that was propping him up and was being invited into the church. You're preaching this to a body that might not be able to carry this out. And it's because of that gap between what you're saying you can accomplish by faith versus whether or not you have the skills and the network to get it done. So the fine line that I see is that sometimes prosperity preaching kind of slides into that, like that used car salesmanship type thing, where the person is just kind of selling you the dream of driving. They didn't necessarily say that this car was going to work. You bought that car. You know what I'm saying? And that's on you. There's not going to be any responsibility for that. So it's like you got to be careful when somebody's like, you know, you can have your own business, but you don't even really get up and go to work on time, or you have not been able to remain gainfully employed, or you have not, you know, attained a certain level of literacy. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, these are real barriers to long-term successful behavior. But if somebody is pouring into you, all you need to do is believe. It's so much easier for you to believe than to go get a GED. Yeah, it's so much easier. You know, see, do you understand what I'm saying?
But when we trace that progression, these ministries were built up from televangelism. And just to be frank, the people who watched those shows or those programs were not the people, the most grindy people like that.
Yeah,
there's some laziness there. I mean, some people are incapacitated, and I got it. That's fine. They can't.
Yes,
and
we're
go.
Not, and we're not lumping everybody in.
If church
yeah.
is coming to you, why would I go all the way there? I feel that now. Like, it takes something to actually go out and do the work to educate yourself, to find out what's there. But if something is being piped to you via TV or internet stream, mm-hmm. that does encourage you to not go look for it.
Right.
And so
I'm gonna bring it to you.
Right. So you get used to being spoon fed that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just take whatever you get.
And there's been some argument that prosperity preaching takes away from, let's say, a more substantial teaching, holistic teaching of how God, and you know, how God comes to love the church and engages the body of Christ. Because there's always this use of not even flowery language. Like, I don't think Jake's is particularly flowery, but I do think that he has a style that, you know, resonates with his audience.
Yeah.
But I don't think he talks as pretty as Osteen does.
No, and Osteen, because Osteen talks to a different
type. Yeah, to a different group. Now, keep in mind that you can deliver that message, and there might be two people in an audience of 2,000 that have the skill set to execute exactly what that preacher is saying. That always resonated with me when I would sit through some of these services. I'm like, you know what? Everybody's not meant to be an entrepreneur. Everybody's not meant to ascend to the highest ranks of their organization. But there is space for aspirational, you know, encouragement. Here are these encouraging words that say you can be greater than what you're presenting as today. I don't know anybody who's like, yeah, I don't want to hear how I could be, you know, a much better person or be in a much better situation. But I think that it's precarious when The same person telling you that you could be great is the same person selling you a 7-series, you know, book or tape on how to do it.
And here's the thing, you're talking to black people. A lot of these are talking directly to black people. Even the white people like Joel Osteen and Paula White, they still have majority black congregations or largely black congregations. I remember The Guardian came out with a report that said black, I think it was black median wealth by 2053 was going to be in the zero. Negative. Yeah. So the reality is that we are trailing. All financial indicators say we are trailing, but you're selling us the thing. And so here's the thing. You got televangelists who require funding to keep their broadcast going.
Yep.
So the natural thing to do is to preach about money. And so we have to keep making these requests. And I'm really bad at that. Like, anyone listening to this could give to Faith Uncut on Patreon.com. But I haven't said that for like months because I'm so terrible at that. I feel so guilty. I'm like, yeah, you can give us a couple dollars or whatever. It really would help us out. But they were good at that, where I'm terrible at that.
Right.
And so they need
money. But it's also not the model of this particular show.
It's not the model of the show.
Exactly.
It still costs money to run, just like their broadcast costs money to run. Much more money.
But you're also not asking people to send you, you know,
I'm not saying,
$19 million for a new G5.
And I'm not promising you anything. Mm-hmm. You might get nothing from this show. Thank you for
listening. But kicked out of church. Yeah. But go ahead.
So this is one of those things where I understand why money is a problem. Because the people who didn't go to church, who never stepped foot in a church, would catch this on the television. They go over to their parents' house. Somebody's got it. People have TBN on all day long. Mm-hmm. And they see all of these requests for money because they're powering these media
all
empires.
The time.
And they need this revenue. And this is the only way they can get it. It's not like they can say, all right, come to the church and we're going to do a bake sale.
They got to pay for advertising. They got to pay.
So this is how that message proliferated.
Yeah. This is way beyond chicken dinners.
Yeah. And so you can't sell chicken dinners on TV. Mm-mm. It's not going to taste good. Nope. So anyway, that's why we saw this uptick in, you know, preachers asking for money. And so what happened was churches saw, like physical churches, brick and mortars, saw that their members were going to church on television. And so they say, well, what are they doing? What are they doing? One of the things that they were doing was preaching a message that the people were susceptible to. Like, hey, you can be successful. You could be wealthy. All you got to do is sow a seed. So then the churches started preaching, sow a seed. Mm-hmm. And so to catch up with the televangelists, churches started to adopt some of this. And that's why we see this in our brick and mortar churches.
Mm-hmm.
Because they losing members. They hemorrhaging members who just sitting at home sending in a $40 check or $140 check every now and then. And they're like, man, we could do that. We got bills, too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so now you do have churches who have a whole media division. They have a whole media outreach now. So the physical church is doing whatever it's doing, and it's there to serve their local community. But now they are marketing themselves nationally and globally as here is yet another example. Here's another option of where you could go to church. Because, yes, you're home and you're worshiping, or you're not here and you are choosing to worship. And now we're going to leverage our access to all these different tech platforms to make sure that, you know, if you want to watch us on your phone, then you can, you know, and
just push the donate button.
Yeah, if that's what you want to do. Now, it's not required. It's not like we're asking you for the donation before you press play. And I wonder how some organizations might be navigating that. You know, like it's nominal. They don't have to do it, but it does cost money. And I've seen where certain church bodies in offering this, they are also, one, creating jobs. Somebody is doing this work. Two, they are expanding a reflection of the ministry. So there's work that is created behind this. And I can't say that that's bad. You know, your young person in your church needs an AV internship or something.
And who wouldn't want to come off their FedEx job to work for the church? Like, that seems like if you really love God, I would like to work for the church.
Yeah, and there are people, you know, again, I feel like our churches offer opportunities for people to do things that maybe they cannot do or are not doing in their other professional lives or in other places in their personal life. So again, when you expand, you tend to create some opportunity. But televangelism as it has become, or the fact that we've kind of pushed into this prosperity gospel, there are some issues. There are even some ethical issues. I definitely think that what is taking place in Baltimore needs to be looked at. You know, here's a person who, when I say this, he is popular. This is not about tearing him down or ripping him apart at all, but very, very popular.
He's built a brand.
He's definitely built a brand. I just want people to know that the brand is built on people who have not much else to invest their hopes in. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. And this person, even though, and I definitely believe that, you know, I'm a person who's like, believes in anointing. I believe it's there, but I almost feel like he ducks and dodges like that last phase that God wants to take him through, because I don't want to see through certain things that you're doing and literally see them for the money making opportunities that they are. I don't want to see it. But that's what I saw. That's what ultimately led me to leave that place, because there was one time where I went and I was like, I really want to go to Bible study. And I went to Bible study. It was literally this man who had been brought in to discuss his book on, you know, the Tuesday night Bible study. Yeah. And I was just like, what is this? Because people are not coming here to learn on Tuesday night how to be an entrepreneur. But this was the only slot you could get. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And whereas a smaller place might only have 30, 45, 50 people, maybe 100 people for Bible study, here's a place that's going to have 400. And even if you sold 200 of those people a book at $20 a book, you had an excellent night. You know what I'm saying? You had an excellent night. So, you know, and he's definitely not the only one. You now have some of these preachers moving in, the word that's coming to mind is teams, but it's like, here's this main preacher and then here are the network of preachers around him, carrying these brands. I'm seeing conferences about things that ain't never gonna make us free, but they are money makers. And I don't think that we always talk about critical thought, understanding primary sources, and, you know, just being able to think critically through someone marketing something to you. The what's being marketed right here is kind of like this corporate Christianity. You know, it just fits. Here's something that's just gonna fit, and it's not even gonna get on your nerves real bad. It's not gonna challenge you. It's not gonna be inconvenient. Like, it's being offered like these other little components that just fit into your life. Mm-hmm. I just think that the church is bigger and more dynamic than that, or at least has the capacity to be. So a lot of things get left on the table when everything's about prosperity.
It's an interesting thing to see the presentations and how, like, the conferences and things they put on. Like, I remember this was a long time ago, mm-hmm. a song that that the group that I was in did was also picked up by Bishop Jakes, and it was put on the Woman Thou Art Loose conference. And this was a long time ago. So they recorded it on that CD. They're still having that conference. I'm like, when are these women going to get loose? Like, are they the same people? Are they getting a whole new conference of people every year? They coming back
every
year.
If you spend all year sewing women up, and then you spend 5 days.
They're going to get loose. This conference is not effective.
They ain't supposed to be loosed. We don't even like our women loosed. Like, go back in these archives, and we're going to talk about how we don't even like them that way. Yeah, you see what I mean? True. So,
but this is how you get that network of preachers. So you got all of these conference speakers. They're introduced at the conference, and then like, oh, I saw what you did at the conference. Why don't you come to my church? And then they build up their network. They write their books, and they do their thing. And it's just it's hard to be mad at it, because if I look at the sometimes feast of famine presentation in the church, like on the mega church side, you got lights, you know, smoke machines, stage setups, you got bands, like multi-piece bands and great singers. And then if I just go down the street to the local church, good Lord, the music is terrible. Nobody's singing in key. You know, maybe you got one keyboardist with a Casio keyboard. And the thing is, the pastors in these churches are doing good things. Mm-hmm. Wish they had more resources so they could do better things.
Right.
And then I'm looking at these other churches with all these resources that are doing fantastic looking things and just leading people the wrong.
Now we have to be fair though, because some churches are tithing churches and they are actually tithing into smaller ministries. They're growing that network because, believe it or not, I feel like when you are succession planning, right? And you're like, I got all this right now and here's how I'm running. You want to what? Enlarge your sales territory. You want, if I was running an organization and these were my regional sales in this area, I would be looking for places to partner that could carry my brand. Like, where can I expand to? Can I invite you to something? Can I come there and do something for you? I feel like that's the nature of business. So people are constantly talking about that and constantly doing that. But for those smaller churches, even the prosperity gospel is being preached to them that if you would follow this model, you could have more.
Is it real succession planning, though? I mean, these people don't move out the way.
No, not necessarily.
Jakes is still there. Kenneth Copeland is still there. Like, these people do not move. They should have been out the way.
So I feel like, even on Instagram and on secular side, like, people are making money right now writing books telling you about the shit they did. They're not telling you about, like, how to do it yourself. You are paying now the $15, $20, $25, $40 for the book or the Audible or the whatever to learn about all the mistakes that they make. I feel like it's taking a turn where it's not even about helping you be better. Now I'm just going to sell you part of my story.
So this gospel is an infection in that it's everywhere. And it's very difficult to deny it. It's very difficult to go to someone and say, hey, you know that thing that's telling you that you could be great and you're this close to being successful? That thing is terrible. No one's going to listen to that message.
I just want people to be honest about how much work really goes into, you know, moving your chess piece, you know, from this spot to this spot. Nobody is, I mean, I don't know, like, miracles happen every day, but I promise you.
So we started off by going down a new thought path, and
yeah, we
and
went somewhere.
Some of the stuff that they borrowed is not bad stuff. I mean, the basis makes sense. Positive thought is not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing to think positive.
No, it's not.
Situation. It's bad if you take it to an illogical extent, which is where we see. Where we see some of this stuff going. So this is...
Like, where does it end? Where does it end?
Okay, the most devastating ending that I can think of is for the people who believe that God wants them to be healed and whole, and God is able to do all of that, so they deny medical treatment when they need it, i.e. a fatal illness or terminal illness. This has happened, and people do, and it's not just in Christianity, it's in Scientology. Yeah. Something like, if you believe that God is going to do everything and is able to do everything, why would I lessen my faith by taking medicine?
Right.
And people have died.
It's a perspective thing. I don't even think that's what this is necessarily about, but it's like, where do we think that God is not, you know? So like, when it comes to those medical interventions, I'm like, how do you know that God didn't give you that surgeon or that doctor or that, you know, access to that treatment? And that's a part of that whole picture, not eschewing that treatment, asking him to, you know, do something that he literally provided, you know, a way to be done. To be fair.
Do we have to be fair?
I don't know. Because, like, I be saying it, but maybe sometimes I'm not fair. I just feel like want to say that, you know, people have been sitting in these audiences for years now. And for some, their situation has not changed. But for others, they have been able to capitalize on some of this. Really, it's mental, you know, like, it's mental health support and self-help. Like you said, you know, you can do it. But I've put all these other platitudes around it. And they've done something with that energy. They've done something with that renewing of their mind. I think the critique comes from the fact that for where some of these ministries are positioned and rooted, the immediate community is in such poverty that it calls into question, how is the cash moving through the community? And if the cash is moving through the community from people who hardly have it to give to these ties in these huge, huge organizations that turn around and give you, you know, $20 gift certificates to the grocery store, and you've tithed $1,000 this year. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You've moved so much capital into the organization, and none of it's moving back.
Or it's moving out.
Or it's moving out. Or you see, and again, you know, they say, you know, I work hard and I do this, but everything that they work hard and that they've created is based on selling to you.
So that's one area where, and I don't want to be fair, but I actually think that the prosperity teachers get this part right where evangelicals do not.
Okay.
Well, even though they're still evangelicals, mm-hmm. because they do. But they actually focus on this life. Which I wish other Christians did more of, you mm-hmm. know, as opposed to placing your hope in heaven and, you know, I'm going to just suffer as much as right. humanly possible right now so that when I get to heaven, I get my reward.
Right.
They don't do any work here because they know that God's going to do all the work in heaven. Prosperity teachers actually encourage people to look temporally and say things can be great now. The right. problem is, it's highly individualistic to the point where it's saying I can be great. Like I'm not really
extremely American.
Yeah, it's just me, and that's the problem. It's like if this that's where you see the money is not getting mm-hmm. back to where it needs to get to, because it's not saying we can be great. It's not saying we can do those things.
I'm gonna be great, and I hope you are. Right. Yeah, you good? Because I'm gonna be great.
I'm gonna tell you how I can be great. You just gotta have enough faith. Right. If you want to be great like me, just have enough faith.
And if you want to hear about how I got so great, give me a dollar. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you.
It's a pyramid
that situation. That is extremely, extremely.
It is a financial pyramid like other businesses. It's not.
Capitalist.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. All right, so. One of the things that, and I don't, the reason why we haven't done any scripture in this episode is because I don't get in scripture fights. I usually like to step back from the book and look at it holistically and say, what is all of this saying? And when I do that, it is ironic to me that these people who preach this completely ignore the fact that the people who started all of this, meaning Christianity, suffered the most. Mm-hmm. Like they weren't wealthy and healthy, and they were in jail, they were shipwrecked, they were nailed to a cross, they were chased all over the place, exiled to islands, they were killed in the most horrific ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, if there's a correlation between your faith and the prosperity that God awards, you would think that maybe Jesus would have had an easier time. Well, Paul would have had an easier time than, like, I'm waiting for somebody to address the fact that you're saying that this is what God wants, but the people who seem to have the most faith, like Job, just
had
calamity.
Nothing. Yeah.
It does not
stripped
align.
Away. But I feel like if you sit there, you hear that message, you hear that you are so special and resilient and you are blessed because you have suffered. Oh my God, you have suffered. Now I'm gonna sell you the dream of what that suffering could have been for. Mm. You see what I mean? And it might not even be the person's individual situation, but again, they can relate. You see what I'm saying? So it's like you feel like you're having a Job experience. You know, I'm a good person, but for some reason, everything is just not working out. You know, why is God afflicting me? Why is this happening to me? And you go and you sit there and you're like, it's just your season is coming. When your season comes, it's just going to fall out the sky that everything's going to be good. Now, if you read the whole book of Job, it does look like, you know, after there was many, many, many days of suffering, it just turned. You know what I mean? That God just yeah. said, all right, for real, see?
But Job is a stupid book. But, I mean, let me clarify that. The book starts with God and the devil making a wager to mess with this dude who's been doing the right thing.
He ain't doing nothing.
And then they take everything away from him, his family, all of his money, whatever. But focus on the family. They took his family away from him. He mourns and grieves all this time. And then God says, you did the right thing. You didn't curse me. I'm going to give you another family. Like, those people didn't matter at all. Like, the wife and the kids, they were people that God loved. Like, God, just, whoever wrote that book, I got a major problem with the way that they...
But here's the thing, though. When you hear that, You understand what I'm saying? So there are people who go through things where it seems like it's out of their control. Again, you know, your kids are not doing what you thought they would be doing. Your spouse or your loved one, your significant other, is not who you thought it would be or doing what you thought they should be doing or doing what they promised to do. You know, your parents are a mess. Your siblings don't talk to you. Whatever it could be, you're experiencing this isolation. Everybody, I can't say everybody, but there are times where you're sitting in that audience and you're in the body and you are just a group. You're a group, 1,000 lonely people. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You're there. But if it were not for looking to your left or your right, you are alone, yeah. Right? So when you hear these words and they begin to connect with a yearning inside of you, okay, the individual, depending on how they can process the message and the information within it, they can actually imagine a pathway forward from how they're feeling or where they might think they be, where they might think they are, rather, to where they want to be or where they think they should be. That to me is probably the best thing that can happen right before I start trying to double down on and your prosperity, you know. I'm going to know that you're blessed because it looks like this, or because you're going to do these things, or worse yet, I'm going to kind of just by a sleight of hand, just kind of put you onto my system of how to make it.
It is an alluring message because people want to believe they are, yeah, that success is around the corner, that you are this close to it. Now, I guarantee there is a correlation between the increase in attention being paid to the Joel Osteens and the preachers of that ilk, and the fact that Americans as a whole are getting poorer. So there's, mm-hmm, more people now who are susceptible to the message that you're almost successful. The only key ingredient that you're missing is your faith.
Yep.
And you don't have to come to this building to see it. You can just listen to us online, yeah, on your phone.
Yeah, just pay that bill.
You can buy
pay that app. Bill and tithe.
And then, so the problem with all of this is that, aside from the extreme cases of death, because your success is directly linked to your faith, mm-hmm, those two are intrinsically linked. If you are not successful, which there are so many variables
that affect that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you're not successful, then it's your fault for not having, yep, enough faith.
Which is gaslighting, which is abusive, which is could be detrimental.
Because it leads to depression. It leads to disillusionment. It leads to people turning away from God because they'll say, this does not work. Mm-hmm. Or worse, they would end up harming themselves or others, mm-hmm, or not being functional, right, not in which exasperates
or an God already obviously bad doesn't love me because God I'm not successful. Me. Yeah.
And that is the true danger of this gospel. Yeah. That is where it is so deceptive and harmful, is that it puts all of the onus on you. God, mm-hmm, is not doing anything that they claim, you know, the promises of God and these like these magic words to make God do things. But, mm-hmm, if God doesn't do the things, then maybe I didn't say it right. Maybe I didn't believe it enough. And if you were able to do all of this, then Jesus didn't have to do anything for you. You're, mm-hmm, you're strong enough. Your mental resilience is to a level where you can do all of it yourself.
I just think that we just have to recognize that this is an outgrowth of not only American evangelicalism, but also capitalism and how capitalism has intersected with American Christianity and just the American Christian thought and our church structures. And it has become so, you know, we've talked about politics and all this other stuff, but this is ultimately a part of that web where, obviously, if something bad is happening to you, it is your fault. But if you fall in line with these types of thoughts, then only good things can happen. I feel like the proof is in the pudding that people can't cover. When you come to Baltimore and you see where some of these larger churches are anchored, and then you look at the neighborhoods around them, I feel like that's the proof in the pudding. You know, why are you putting diamonds in dirt? You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. Man, not dirt because those people are not worthy, but just dirt because you're not building and you're not fortifying the community around your crown jewel. It could be a leech. This is the same reason why I didn't want casinos in certain places, because I'm like, do y'all think it's an accident? Like, if you have no access to credit, and now you're basically paycheck to paycheck, and you are desperate, don't you know you'll take $100 to the casino with no filter, trying to get $1,000 out, but the casino's going to walk with your $100 and with no guarantee that it has to put it anywhere near you. You see what I'm saying? And then people felt a certain type of way because it was a casino, but churches do it all the time.
So the more I think about this, the more frustrated I get, because
we're going to have to come back.
Because I really wish, I don't want to come back to this. I hate this topic. Like, I don't know why I said we want to do this, because I've been trying to avoid it. But if I believe that my faith is the catalyst for my success, and then I look at you and you're not successful, I'm inclined to think you don't have enough faith, which means I'm not going to accurately assess the power or the effectiveness of this gospel. So let me give you an example. The pastor that you mentioned, Jamal Bryant, is leaving Baltimore AME Church, which I need to talk to my AME friends to figure out how this works, because those pastors are usually appointed. And he's leaving AME to go to New Birth in Atlanta. Okay. So Eddie Long, the late Eddie Long, was also a prosperity preacher. Okay. Eddie Long died of an undisclosed illness. Okay. So logically, you might be able to say, well, does the wealth, the health, does that work? Like, did he have, but the gospel that they preach causes you to say, whoa, he just didn't have enough faith, or something, like there was something there, or whatever. You can't make an assessment of, like, the only thing you can say is about yourself. And what you'll end up saying about yourself if something doesn't work is that I'm not effective enough.
So again, you know, people have made prosperity preaching, and if it raises your profile, it makes you a public figure. And when it comes to this particular transition, I feel like an organization just found a new CEO. I don't feel like this is not about, again, about attacks. You know, we can talk about the circumstances. It's an excellent business move, because you have somebody who has a national, international profile, who has a savvy for attracting attention. And if you want to attract attention, now here's what I'm saying about an organization, a business organization found a new CEO. He is just as controversial as Long was. So somewhere behind the scenes, you got to figure out who did the valuation on the controversy, because there could have been a million different directions to go in without having to choose this person to succeed the late pastor. But that's not what you did. You're choosing somebody who is
messy.
I mean, for lack of a better term, and I like how that just sews it up. He's messy. You know what I mean? A lot of moves cannot be made without being scandalized. And he might have friends in high places, but he's also experienced public rebuke. And it's like, you know, who is this really working out for? Because I feel like there are thousands of people.
Yes.
In, let's say, the greater Baltimore area, who are waiting for this mythical ship to come in that he's been selling to them for the last 10 years or so. You know what I mean? Across marriage relationships, divorces, issues that are human issues. But had it not been for other tethers in his life and other people trying to, let's say, put some order on some situations, it wouldn't even have played out like that. But here's a person that was getting ready to run for the House of Representatives on a whim, for real. Do you know how out of order you gotta be to get a phone call from a sitting representative in the House who's like, I'm not going no motherfucking where? But like, that's who y'all just, you know what I'm saying, just put over as the head of your church. So this is an organization that got a new CEO. Whether or not his placement is going to serve the least of them, that remains to be seen.
So we've done the background, the history. We've done why this is attractive. I've even, you know, admitted some things that they do well. And we talked about some things they don't do so well.
Yeah.
Is any of this going to matter? Are people going to really stop patronizing.
Actually, I honestly think it is. I think it will matter because people want to see something for what they're investing in, be it their time or their money. And I think that the energy around all of this is what are you getting out of it? So are people going to continue to blindly throw, you know, their hard earned funds behind chasing somebody else's dream? So, yeah, a new fool is born every minute. But I don't know if them good Southerners are ready for this young man. You understand what I'm saying? But even if they make space for him, they could do something that wasn't done up here. They could run his ass out of town because it might just be too much for them, you know, just culturally. So I think it will matter overall because all things are starting to matter. The things that are falling away is, I think, the BS. Do you need to buy his book to be any closer to God's glory so that you can be successful? Hell no, you don't need that. You know what I mean? You want something more tangible. You want something that has a little bit more traction to it. So I think the more in touch people get with why they are listening to and attracting, not attracting, but consuming the messages that they are, they will become more discerning about those messages. Just like your diet. You keep eating something and making you sick, you're going either you're going to eat yourself to death or you're going to finally change your diet. I think that's where we are with this.
Yeah, I don't actively want these ministries to fail.
At all.
My concern is for the
health. I want them to really serve.
The actual mental and spiritual health of the people who patronize these ministries, who genuinely look for a connection with God.
Yeah.
Like, I want them more than anything to be okay. If that means getting out from under this ministry, fine. If that means, you know, staying with the ministry but being aware of what's actually going on there,
mm-hmm.
whatever. I just don't want people to continue to be harmed by poor theology that is ineffective and it actually does documented harm.
I've had a conversation with somebody where, you know, always on the tip of her tongue is, you know, I love my pastor, my pastor, my pastor. And I was like, okay, you know, because I understand that. But at one point in time, we did have a conversation about, do you know who the relationship is really supposed to be with? You know, or how do you feel about loving God the way you love your pastor? And it wasn't meant to stop the flow of love and affection toward this earthly, you know, this human being that is showing that support and showing that leadership. But I definitely just wanted to put it in this person's awareness that the goal was never for you to become your pastor's BFF or their number one cheerleader or their number one defender. No, you know, that obscures who you are really supposed to be having the relationship with. And I don't think that, unlike certain examples that I could think of, I don't think that it was her pastor that was demanding this. I just think that it was, you know, just how this person relates to people and how they build relationships and how they attach to people. It says, I have to attach to you. And then that reflects that I have this other, you know, deeper relationship with God. And I think this is the same thing. You know, there are people who he won to the body of Christ, and then there are people that he won to the temple, to the church. Him leaving will kind of show that. Mm. Are they leaving too, you know, or have they been tethered to something greater than just his figurehead? That's what you hope. I hope that I gave you a hook into something more permanent than me.
All right, y'all. We want y'all to be safe out there in all your churches and all your non-churches and everywhere that you find God. Just be safe. Take care of yourselves. For Faith Uncut, I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.